Welcome to a special subscriber-only supplement to the Stall 7 podcast. Thank you to those of you who are UltiWorld subscribers and are joining us this week. We're going to take a little different approach and start looking ahead to this weekend's matchups and zero in on the matchups with the greatest or most significant playoff ramifications. And let's start with the marquee matchup out east. This is kind of the Avengers Infinity War, not Endgame. This is Infinity War of the AUDL East Division so far this season. We're going to get our first look at New York versus Toronto. Since New York ended Toronto's season last summer, that shocking upset in the first round of the playoffs. Chris, Brian, I don't know who wants to go first, but at some point, love to hear from both of you what you think the X factor is going to be in each in this game.
So I think the X factor is Toronto's ability to handle dominant cutters. Because in the Ottawa Outlaws game that was so shockingly close this past weekend, Alec Arsenault absolutely obliterated them.
That's right.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he had like 86 goals.
He had 10 to clarify, but still
that,
a lot.
That sounds right.
86, 10, same thing.
And they weren't these like Jordan Huston bogus like chasing records goals where he's just kind of like they're like intentionally force feeding him around the end zone. These were like ripping deep cuts, like skying big defenders, cutting people up in the handler space type of goals. And I don't know, they tried several different guys on him. They tried Zlotich on him. I think Massett Kelly took a chance out on him. Breton Tan, and none of them could handle him. And New York Empire have probably the most dangerous array of cutters in the league. So I'm really curious how they're going to try to handle Grant Linsley, Ben Yacht, Jeff Babbitt when he's on offense.
No, that's totally fair. I mean, the defense is something to highlight for sure. I completely agree with that. They've not looked good at times this season. Go back even week before their previous game playing against Montreal, Quentin Bonnod went off for 8 goals in that game. So they definitely have had issues shutting down another team's isolated cutter, and New York is really good at that. You just hit on the number of players that they have to go to. But looking actually at one of the players I think is going to have a pretty big impact, and he's gone pretty under the radar so far this season. Ian, I actually know you talked to Sachin about this when you had a chance to sit down with him. Akinfumi Moroka has had a great start to his rookie season in the AUDL for Toronto. He put on a really strong performance, and I think he's really settling into this team. He's looked really strong. He touches the disc a decent amount on offense. He's definitely had a couple of turnovers, but he seems to be slowly cutting down on those. I think he's going to be a player that if New York doesn't find a way to, doesn't have an answer for him pretty early on, that he could get hot and he could get going. He scored 2 goals in the fourth quarter of this past game and looked comfortable. He really didn't at any point seem like he was overwhelmed by the moment or out of sync with the rest of the offense. He definitely is integrated well into the system they run, and I think having a really good season so far.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear Coach Reyna talk about his subbing strategy or line calling strategy with Moroka. You know, he's obviously going to be out there playing most, if not every, O point. And then when he's going down the line, calling out his 6 bodies for a D point or an important break, and he hasn't really completed the line, his mind always goes to Moroka. And he's that next guy who's going to get double duty and double shifted over onto that D line for the chance to really emphasize and punch in that break. So no shortage of opportunities, I would expect, for him to make plays this coming weekend.
And looking at New York side of things, we've already seen, like, I think that the X factor is going to be if Ben Yacht can be stopped. Because I think he's the player. We've talked about Toronto's defensive deficiencies of late. He's the player that if New York gets going, that he's just unstoppable. And he looked like it this past weekend against DC. I mean, that's probably the lost storyline in all of this. You know, with all the controversy that comes at the end of that game, it's, oh, well, you know, what happens? What could have been? Everyone's focused on the whole thing with the Rowan McDonald timeout. And instead, you miss out on the fact that Ben Yacht put up 9 goals and 8 assists this weekend in one game. Like, that's not over the course of 2 games. That's a 1-game stat line, which is insane.
That's video game
numbers.
It's
almost as many as Yeah, that's almost as many as Arsenault's 86 goals.
Right.
I mean, yeah, when you combine them, it almost adds up. So it's just funny. Like, you look at how great this New York team is, and we've seen it already. Jeff Babbitt has had games where he scored 5 goals. Jack Williams is more than capable of tallying 6, 7, 8 assists in a game, or scoring downfield. I mean, if you watch Jack Williams play in college, he was pretty much unstoppable downfield. And I don't really think that's changed since he's joined Raleigh Ring of Fire full-time or even playing with the U.S. national team. Like, they have a lot of players that they could isolate downfield, especially on offense. And I think they're going to take advantage of that against Toronto. Toronto has not looked sharp. However, I think we're going to see a different Toronto team. Classic trap game this past weekend for them against Ottawa. No question about it. You look at, they've never lost to Ottawa once in franchise history, and you know that you have a trip to go play in New York, who's been touted as the super team and the team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year for the first time ever, not making championship weekend. There are so many different things that I'm sure Toronto, whether they will acknowledge it or not, has circled mentally on that calendar about that New York game that makes it very easy to overlook Ottawa. So who knows? Maybe we will see a more focused, a more locked-in Toronto team going into this New York matchup. But Ben Yat, if he gets going, I don't know that Toronto has an answer for him.
Guys, can I put you on the spot?
Okay.
This is unplanned. Who do you think is the best player on the New York Empire?
Oh,
Best all around player, both sides of the disc. You'd want him on your, you know, universe line, no matter what the situation.
Yes, like the best ultimate player.
Ooh, Ian, do you have a ready made answer?
Yeah,
for that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Jack Williams. Obviously, Ben's put up the stats. Grant's been a great offensive piece. Jeff Babbitt has been a monster, but if you look at all-around skill set, the ability to take nearly any defensive matchup, whether he's got to start on someone in the backfield, start downfield, if he needs to initiate and dictate as an offensive cutter, or he needs to be facilitating as an offensive handler, he's not just, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. He is extremely skilled in every facet of the game and can handle those responsibilities. Has a history of making plays for Ring, for the U.S. Under 24 national team, you name it. My money's on Jack.
See, I definitely lean towards saying Jack as well. I think he's definitely shown the ability to step up in big moments and do that consistently. The only other one I think I would. There are two players that I could argue here that might be better. I would honestly say Jeff Babbitt, just because of the sheer physical ability he has. He's not anywhere near as talented a thrower as Jack is. There's no question that Jack Williams is an incredible thrower and has pretty much anything that you want him to put up there. I don't know how strong his lefty forehand game is, but you know, I think that's probably something you could live without. But Babbitt is a matchup nightmare anywhere on the field when he's downfield. We've seen him make grabs that most players, they don't come anywhere close to. He attacks the disc in a very different way, I think, than a lot of other players. If you're asking me who I want downfield, if we get to like a jump ball situation on that team, I'm probably picking Babbitt. You know, those jump ball situations tend to be scrums, and he's a big body guy. He can box everybody out. He's physically gifted. He can jump high. He's fast.
He's a grizzly bear. He's just a grizzly bear, man. He's crazy.
I mean, he has a lot of those same attributes that you associate with a grizzly bear. So I think he has probably the skill set that stands out the most because of his ability to just simply take over a game at any one moment downfield. Don't be wrong. I mean, it's great to have a really high level handler that can just dictate the flow of play. And you obviously need somebody to do that. But New York has so many of those players. And I know they have some great downfield cutters, but I don't think there's anybody on that team who matches Jeff Babbitt's ability downfield. He is a matchup nightmare in every sense of the word.
I agree with Ian. I'm going to keep it quick because I know we're running out of time. I think it's Jack. I get the other arguments, but the kind of the way I think of it is, like, on one end of the continuum, you have Grant Linsley, who's just hyper competent. He's just in the right place all the time, always open. Every cut is fundamental. Every throw is fundamental. He just, like, is the most competent ultimate player out there. And then on the other end, you have the physically dominant freak in Jeff Babbitt. And the guy that they have who's, like, right in the middle and can do both of those things is Jack Williams, which I think is what Ian was trying to say as well, or what Ian was saying very effectively as well, is that he's both physically dominant, he'll go get a hospital pass, and he's also just in the right place all the time, wide open, and hits the next throw.
Yeah, but you painted a prettier picture, Brian, so.
Yeah, I like that. So he's the... Wait, so we're just going with he's the love child of Grant Linsley and Jeff Babbitt? Is that what we're going with here?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, all right. I think that sums it up pretty well for all our listeners at home. I think that paints about as good of a picture as we could possibly go with. And on that note, I think we're going to end talking about that. I don't think there's anything else we could add to this game now. There's a few other games, actually, to keep an eye on, even though we've really hyped up this New York-Toronto matchup. Couple of Midwest matchups. We'll dive in a little bit to this Madison-Chicago game, both teams coming off a loss. And then an interesting kind of matchup between Indy and Minnesota, because right now, I mean, that playoff race is wide open, and Indy coming off of a pretty disappointing loss against Atlanta is definitely concerning. So let's start with Madison and Chicago, though. I think this is going to be maybe less so of like a coming out party for the rest of the division as much as it is Madison just getting back on track. I think Madison's going to win this game, and I think it's going to be by a couple of goals. Chicago definitely wasn't at full strength. They were missing Martin Pardo. They were missing a couple other players on that defense, which meant that they had a couple of players like Matt Rader, I know, throughout that Pittsburgh game was crossing over a lot more than he usually would. And, you know, he's a great player, but there's only so much, especially with these long AUDL games, it's something that's much harder to do when you have a smaller roster, to cross over players deep into games. It loses the effectiveness. We've seen that with even players like Rowan McDonald, who's the reigning AUDL MVP. There have definitely been times where Rowan has started to play too much to the point where his effectiveness starts to decline. So it's a tough balance, and I think Chicago will bounce back and play better in this upcoming game. But as much as it is, you know, Madison looks vulnerable, this is still the same team that just won an AUDL championship a year ago. And I think they're going to really hone in on some of the mistakes they've been making. It's hard. I found in my time playing the sport, it's hard to really evaluate what has gone wrong in a win. When you sit down at the end of the day and you're like, wow, like, we really need to work on this, and we really need to change our approach based on some of the things that we're throwing on offense, especially like you said, Ian, earlier talking in our main show about Madison throwing the game away. It's hard to really feel like those mistakes are costing the team when you're still coming out on top. When there's a loss, I think it really refocuses a lot of people. And I think as weird as it is to say, this is actually probably a good thing for Madison at this point in the season. It allows them to evaluate where they're at, take some stock in some of the things that they've already done to this point in the season, and now build on what they've been successful with and really address those weaknesses. A loss sometimes, it's never a good thing for a team, but there are really bad losses that are completely inexplicable, and there are losses that highlight things that the team needs to change and gives them an opportunity to build on them going forward. I think this past loss to Minnesota was the latter for Madison. I think they'll bounce back pretty big and go on the road and take care of Chicago.
I just don't know what to think anymore after this past weekend. You know, I feel like I had coming into the Madison-Minnesota matchup, Madison was probably a 5-ish point favorite. Chicago going into Pittsburgh, I probably had Chicago as a 3-4 point favorite. And we saw how those expectations got completely flipped on their head with those upsets and surprising results. I feel like getting the sense of, you know, talking with some of the Madison players, as I was able to do before and after the game, you know, they haven't really accelerated their training and practice and preparation in the same way so far this year. That's not to say that they're taking their foot off the gas or that they're, you know, completely skipping things. I'm not throwing baseless accusations out there, but I think from a general focus, urgency, you know, practice perspective, I'm not sure that they're desire and their intensity is at the same level as it was at the end of last year. And I think some of the players would readily, you know, admit that. At the same time, Chicago is a team that's coming up and has more talent than ever. And let's be honest, the expectation paradigm for the Wildfire has shifted with all of their additions of, you know, Raider, Zane Rankin, and just, God forbid, imagine if Kirk Gibson was actually healthy and contributing to this team. I'm less sold that this is just going to be an easy 4-goal bounce back win for Madison. I think if Chicago can play with discipline, I do think that they're going to give Madison trouble. God, I haven't made my pick on AUDLpicks.com, but
I haven't either.
The matchups on Giannis and Raider are going to be especially important. And I feel like something that maybe I've gotten sucked into is just throwing out this whole, you know, oh, you never know what the Madison zone is going to do or what Madison zone they're going to, what Madison zone has tweaked in the last, you know, couple weeks or months. And let's be honest, we have not seen a lot, if any substantial amount of the Madison zone so far this year. They're definitely changing their defensive focus to try and become more competent, just straight up man-to-man, person-to-person matchup defense. And I think that's a learning process. And, you know, it's not something that you find overnight. You need a season of practices and adjustments to really get your man-to-man defense legs and reps and get comfortable there. So all of this is to say, I'm not sold on this being an easy Madison victory. If you got to put my feet to the fire and ask for a prediction, I'm going to say Chicago maybe wins this one by two. Maybe it's a 1-goal game.
All right.
But that's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, both teams, it's hard to figure out this whole Midwest. And I think the interesting thing too, is that Madison did lose a game like this kind of last year. They got blown out by Raleigh at home. And that I think allowed them to refocus a lot. So we'll see. I think it's, yeah, there's a lot that we're going to learn from this game about the rest of the Midwest this season. Because whoever wins this game, I mean, really takes control of the division, has the head-to-head victory early on, not to mention will be, I believe, statistically leading the division as well in terms of win-loss, like percentage and stuff like that. So this is the implications of this game are huge.
I think it's really crazy to try to predict sports. It's even crazier when it's semi-pro. And the lesson, as always, is that we're just three dudes with AUDL TV subscriptions.
Yep.
Way to knock us all down a peg, Brad.
Take what we say with a grain of salt.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, I mean, yeah. So I think at this point, if you're still listening after that, there's a couple of games actually in week eight that could be very interesting. I mean, for one reason or another, or it could be very interesting for a completely different set of reasons just based on the results of week seven. Toronto will host Madison in what is probably the am I right in saying this is the best interdivision game of the entire year, Madison-Toronto?
Well, there's an argument for that. There's also an argument for the New York-Raleigh game, the Jack Williams Bowl.
Oh.
But
oh. Oh, you know what? No, never mind. That's definitely the game of the year.
But this is still a significant game that, you know, maybe Madison's playoff positioning, I guess I shouldn't say maybe, you know, both of these teams could have a serious need to win this game to stay at the top of their division or hold on to their spot at the top of the division going down the stretch run for the playoffs. We don't know what's going to happen this weekend with these matchups between, you know, with Chicago and New York respectively, but look, I'll throw it out there again. We've said it several times on here. 12-game season, smaller margin for error, can't have throwaway games, can't slip up, and an interdivisional game like this. Yes, you may not be losing a game directly to a head-to-head divisional opponent, but this is something that can be one of the best tests that you face before championship weekend if you're able to qualify for championship weekend. And I don't think either team is going to overlook this or take it lightly, like just another game on the schedule.
I'm really excited for this game. These two teams might have the most like high level roster continuity of any team in the AUDL. You could probably check me on that, but they're just two highly competent, poised teams that know how to play together, and I think that's gonna produce some really good ultimate. And I'm just looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more to add than that. I think this is going to be a matchup definitely to keep an eye on, and one that will have major playoff implications because, let's say Toronto does beat New York, well, that essentially gets undone if they then turn around the next week and lose to Madison. So, you know, it doesn't really give them any advantage. And for Madison, you're looking at probably the most brutal part of their schedule right now, where they go at Chicago, then at Toronto. So, I mean, if you can easily explain away two road losses in the AUDL. However, losing those two games, Madison would drop to, I believe, 500 for the first time in I don't know how long, to be honest with you. But
yeah,
that seems just unthinkable, especially where we pictured them to be at the beginning of the season. So, I mean, hey, it's going to be a huge benchmark over the next 2 weeks. And then, I mean, also, I mean, hey, we'll get a chance to see maybe some of those all-star performances as we get to see some of these guys duke it out, play up, match up against each other, and really make a case for those all-star teams, because the all-star break is not that far away, and I believe voting will have to happen at some point where we will have to eventually cut off what we're considering for criteria, right? It has to.
I'm not sure about that, but I think if Madison drops below 500, they have to chug that bottle of champagne and live stream it.
I think KPS would probably do that as like a motivational tactic for the rest of the year. Kevin Pettit-Scantling would take that upon himself and just do it.
Chris, did you?
And then Madison would go undefeated the rest of the way.
Did you book your ticket to Toronto that weekend to be there celebrating KPS's birthday after the game?
I have not yet. I actually wanted to coordinate with you. Are we still doing that?
Well, I've got to be in Austin for the college championships, and Evan Lepler is actually going to be in Toronto that night and then getting on a plane first thing the next morning and flying to Austin.
That sounds like Lepler. That sounds like Evan's schedule.
If only we could all be jet setters like Evan.
If only we could all be Evan Lepler. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, yes, that would be what we're doing. But instead, we got relegated to the AUDL podcast, not AUDL broadcast.
And I didn't even get invited to this birthday party. So,
well, sorry. This was preseason, actually, before Brian was officially...
It's fine, guys. It's just my feelings that you hurt. I'll bounce back. I'll be right.
Honestly, I think Kevin would be... The more the merrier seemed to be his approach to it. You just need to pay your own way to Toronto.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah. So there's that small issue. Outside of that, though, I think Kevin's got you covered in terms of, like, you could definitely just roll with him. The more Frisbee people that Kevin could possibly celebrate his birthday with, I think the happier he would be.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this subscriber-only segment of Stall 7. Thank you very much for listening. Good luck setting your picks on audlpicks.com if you're playing. Once again, our main episode and subscriber bonus will be back again in 2 weeks, just before week 9. If you have the time and feel so inclined, we'd really appreciate an honest rating and review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find out about the show. Thank you very much for listening. And for Brian and Chris, have a good week, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.